Yeah, just an unbelievable way to win a game last night. It's no question. By the way, as we talk about things that are kind of unbelievable, Jerry Jones being Jerry Jones is...
It's amazing.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It is. So I want to play this audio for everyone listening, if you missed this yesterday, because there's ways to answer questions, and then there's ways to not answer questions. So Jerry Jones meets with the assembled media yesterday. And, of course, you know, one of the big storylines in Dallas, and it's one of the bigger storylines in pro football, is what's going on with Micah Parsons, who, you know, still doesn't have that big contract, which he's clearly going to get from somebody.
Think about how long ago they signed Devontae. Same draft.
That's right.
Think about how long ago like, you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. So he's shown up at camp, but obviously he wants that, you know, $150 million payday, which he deserves. And so yesterday, in the midst of answering a question about the Micah Parsons contract thing, Jerry Jones, just kind of like out of nowhere, has an odd comment that it's not the way you should be speaking about your star quarterback. And I'm not saying Dak Prescott's the man, because he's not the man, but he's a pretty good quarterback. He's given him, you know, about a decade of service. And this is just a very odd way on the start of training camp to reference your QB.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
I mean, let me just say this. He's not wrong, but John, could you imagine Jeffrey Lurie saying that? Like, there's no part of this where Dak Prescott was asked about. He's asked about Micah Parsons, and he just kind of like throws a grenade at his star quarterback, who, by the way, is under contract still for like a bunch of years. It's just a very, and I'm not going to buy the, like, the old Jimmy Johnson, like, I'm motivating you thing. This isn't motivation. This is just bad owner being a bad owner. John Lurie would never say that.
Is so sapient. Look, right now they have a real problem in terms of trying to figure out how to transfer power, you know, gracefully from one generation to the next, and that's the issue right now. And there was a period a couple years back where, I'm not sure exactly why or how, because I don't pay, you know, close attention to the inner workings of, you know, cowboy land, but it seemed as though he was backing off and, you know, pulling his fingers off of everything. You know, his fingerprints were less on the Dallas Cowboys, and it was to their advantage. It was helping them. And now, man, I mean, it's advantageous for us, for our interests.
Right.
The fact that he is back and more involved than ever, it's great, but they should be, you know, concerned, because this is not a smooth transition from father to son, or however they're planning to do
this. Doesn't seem like father wants to transition either.
No. He has not been compliant with the process, seemingly.
John, as a player who got hurt playing this game, J.J. Watt posted something which Micah Parsons reposted. He said, nothing makes guys want to fight for you more than hearing how upset you are that they got hurt while fighting for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
because injuries are, like, you can say a lot about a guy like Dak Prescott on, you know, he hasn't been quite all that was expected, but he's pretty good. And, like, his injuries have been very legit.
I mean, rip him for getting hurt.
Right.
It's football.
And we all remember, like, when he completely spun around and his ankle got ripped off.
It was like one of the uglier ankle ones we'll see. And he came right back from that
the next year. Yeah. So,
look, like, I think Jerry's got it right. Anytime you can rip your star quarterback and your best player in 30 seconds, I mean, just do it, right?
It's so weird. All right, so
his new head coach appeared flummoxed while sitting next to him.
Well,
I thought that was the funniest part.
I think a lot of the coaches down there have been flummoxed through the years, and they kind of deal with it. And they say, well, I get to be the Cowboys coach and make a bunch of millions. But they all know privately that's not a culture from Jerry Jones down conducive to winning.
Well, I think we're seeing with the Brian Schottenheimer hire. I mean, he might work out, he might not. We know these things. Nick wasn't liked when he went, but that is a theoretically prestigious job.
Right.
And Brian Schottenheimer was 85th on coaches list or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, let's be honest.
And I don't know if this Schottenheimer guy's an alpha at all. I frankly have no idea. I think we do know from the past coaches there, other than Parcells, you know, post-Switzer, because Switzer had some alpha in him with his college accomplishments. But post-Switzer, and certainly because of the Jimmy Johnson experience, other than Parcells, you know, I mean, it's very obvious Jerry Jones has run away from alpha figures to run his football operation. Right. And so you get these guys, you know, you get the Garretts and you get the
guys
you know,
who bend over backwards for Jerry Jones.
The Wade Phillips and whoever they've all been. I mean, it's been ridiculous. All right, 215-592-9494.
But it's, you know, he was even wrong. He quoted, hey, we could pay him all that money. Yeah. We didn't have him for six games last year. You know, that's wrong.
It was four, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk to Ed in Phoenixville. It's a beautiful thing as an Eagles fan. Ed, good morning.
Happy training camp day, everybody.
Thanks, Ed.
Yeah, so, gosh, I think the word humble and succession planning are very long lists of things that Jerry Jones never says or is associated with him.
Yeah.
So I just hope that he just keeps doing what he's doing for our sake.
That's for sure.
It's got to be tough to be Stephen Jones, man. Like, I don't feel bad for him at all. He's not one for anything, really, but that's got to be, you know, a difficult situation. But, you know, about training camp, I'm just, you know, the one position that really kind of, it actually concerns me, given where they are from an injury standpoint, besides Zach Bond, like, who's going to be an immediate contributor to this defense? And I think, I mean, we're going to see a lot of Mondon in training camp, so he's going to get the reps. But where's Dean going to be Campbell?
Campbell, yeah.
Because
I don't think Dean's going to be anywhere. The question is, when is Campbell somewhere, and then how good is he early? But when does that even start? We don't know
and
that.
And how does, like, Trot Jr. or whoever fills in the meantime play?
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be important.
I mean, let's be real. When they get on the practice field tomorrow, I'm guessing Trot Jr. is the starter.
No.
I'd be shocked if he's not.
You think it's Mondon?
Necessarily.
Who do you think it is, Sean?
I don't know. I'm excited to see this Mondon guy.
I'll be surprised.
I doubt if he'll start the first day, the first practice is the point, especially with Vic.
Exactly. Okay. Maybe 3 or 4 weeks in, but I think tomorrow, first unit, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. Yeah.
I'm not sure. And there's another, they've got a couple other guys who are new on the scene, Dallas Gant and some guy, Lance Dixon. I don't know how they'll factor
in. I'm guessing they're not starting.
They ain't starting. Ed, one of John's favorite pastimes is reading Eagles depth chart. And he just starts reading every single name at the position.
But real, though, this Smile Mondon guy.
No, it could be him. But
he's going eventually, to it just won't be. It won't be day one.
It won't
but
be tomorrow.
He could, you know, shine.
Yeah. Well, Ed, look, there's a lot to be excited about, my man.
I have one more thing, and I got to challenge Elliot Short Parks here. I need to see the next development in the training camp stats. There needs to be a new wrinkle.
Ooh.
There needs to be snaps under center. There needs to be, you know, a Cooper DeJean tracker. Just kind of things on the top of my head. He needs to keep developing like the rest of our players. You know, he can't get complacent.
All right, Ed, you got it.
You know what we really needed was a Cooper DeJean offseason tracker. That dude's been everywhere doing everything.
Yes, he has. James, you know Elliot better than any of us. We'll talk to him in about an hour.
Yes, I do.
Did he invent, of the national, all the reporters that cover a team, did he invent the concept of tracking a quarterback stats in training camp?
Yeah. Elliot was the first to do it. Now everyone does
we
it.
We know that.
Elliot was the first to do it. Like, I do a podcast with him. We've talked about it forever. Like, I remember, because we talked about it on the pod, when other people started doing it, and he'd be like, look at this, Browns guy doing, Elliot was absolutely the first to do
it. Didn't an NFL Network reporter last year ask Sirianni about it? Am I remembering this?
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
He was laughing about it. My favorite part, though, about Elliot is that he wears his notebook around his neck.
Oh, man. Like a dork.
Oh, I mean, it's the biggest
like a
nerdiest.
Journalist, okay? Come on.
It's really
give the guy
nerdy.
A little credit.
I give him a lot of credit. I'm just saying, like a dork. I mean, that's my opinion.
It's a little dark.
Hey, let's get to. So I got an intriguing Philadelphia sports question for everyone today. And we stumbled into this question.
I just wanted to say that keeping track of all those stats and stuff. The team is keeping track of everything. Like those players, I guarantee the guys who were fifth on the depth chart, you know, they're keeping track of every one of those stats as well. They got them in their locker, posted up there for motivation every day.
And they film the whole and they film the whole thing and go back and look at. Elliot can't do that. You can't, you know, you can't stand there and film a practice as a reporter. So that's, I mean, not like the whole thing. You get a little snippets here and there, but not the whole deal.
But they do compile all the stats.
Oh yeah,
and it really is magnificent, though, the way that he
he does a great job. He does. So Elliot in about an hour with us on the first day of training camp. Also an intriguing Philly sports question for you. So we asked a variation of this yesterday, and then Rhea had a very wise Rhea-like answer that made me say, I got to amend the question. So Rhea, yesterday I asked you and asked
everyone. I noticed you did that. That's not nice of you.
Yeah. Yesterday I asked the question. It was just, we kind of stumbled in. It was like, hey, if you could pick one of the four Philly teams to win the next title in Philly sports, who would you prefer it be? And then Rhea's like, well, I'll take the Phillies because, you know, their season ends the earliest. So that gives the other three teams a chance to win after that. All right. It's a wise answer. So we now have a Twitter poll question of the day that's a variation of that question. And this is a better way to frame what I was trying to get at. Twitter poll question of the day brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin's annual sizzling summer event is happening now. The savings event is happening. Visit ArminChevy.com for details. Together, let's drive to Armin Chevrolet. Here's the poll question that gets at the heart of what I was trying to ask. If only one of our teams wins a championship in the next 365 days. See what I'm doing here, John?
Yeah.
Only one title in the next 365 days. Which one do you prefer it be? Now, we're going to put them in the order of how the seasons will finish chronologically. A, the Phillies. Obviously, they end in early November or sooner. B, the Eagles. C, and it's hard to know who's going to end first, NHL or NBA. It kind of goes back and forth. But we'll go C, the Flyers. D, the Sixers. So I really am honestly kind of fascinated to find out how people answer this. I mean, some of it is like maybe which one do you lean more toward in a fandom standpoint. Some of it could be, like, I'm going to tell you my answer out of the gate because the first two are really intriguing. The Eagles would be back-to-back for the first time since the Flyers in the 70s. The Phillies would be this group finally gets it done.
And two titles in the same year, like you had pointed
out. And two titles in the same
literally
year.
Literally in the exact same
That's
year.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the Flyers and Sixers represent something similar, which for many of us, if you're under the age of about 50, you've never seen them win a title. I mean, 83, I mean, I'm 47 years old, and I don't remember watching the 83 Sixers. I remember the night they won, horns honking, but I can't say I remember Game 4 versus the Lakers, like, watching it live, and I certainly wasn't alive when the Flyers won in the 70s. So for a lot of people, Flyers and Sixers represent, for a lot of people, like, I've never seen it. Or if you have seen it, it's been so long, it'd be cool to see that. So we'll ask you, which one would be your preference? I will tell you this, my answer. And this really took me some time to drill down on. I thought about it before the show. My answer would be the Sixers for one very specific reason. What do you guys think that reason is?
Outside of just never having seen it in your time.
Yeah, different than that. It represents something very specific. What is it?
The process. Finally,
that Joel Embiid got totally back together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the only way it can happen. The only way the Sixers can win a title is if Humpty Dumpty's put back together.
I hate to break it to you, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm well aware. No, I'm well aware. So I'm just curious where you stand. You can vote, you know, online at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. But certainly we'd love to field your phone calls as well because there are compelling cases to be made for all four. And which would, because I know this, if the others don't win it but the Sixers do, the Eagles and the Phillies should still be good next year.
There's a flaw of the Sixers thing, though.
What's that?
That Josh Harris gets to be a championship owner. Like, it feels dirty. I know, and I'll take the championship. Don't get me wrong. If we're parsing it out, like, him being a championship owner, I like, irks me.
You,
like, I don't like that.
It irks me, too.
I agree with you.
He could get booed in a ring ceremony.
Ugh.
I mean, the owner could get booed when he gets handed the trophy. No, he could. But anyway, so think about it. And you can call us at 215-592-9494 to answer that question because I think it is an intriguing question. Also, when you call in today, let's give you a chance to win a very cool prize. And that's a 4-pack of tickets to see the Eagles in a training camp practice. This is the public practice at the Link happening on August the 10th at 6 p.m. So get an up-close and look at the reigning Super Bowl champs, the Birds, public practice, all sorts of interactive stuff. You know, you got the in a swoop and the cheerleaders and games for the kids in various sections of the stadium and the face painting and all that good stuff. So be there. And be there courtesy of our program today as we give away these tickets at 215-592-9494. The Phillies last night won a game in a very, very wacky way. A unique thing from sports that hadn't happened since 1971. A walk-off victory courtesy of catcher's interference. Let's listen to it.
Oh, wow.
Philadelphia is challenging that there was catcher's interference on the play.
Can you imagine?
Oh, my goodness, there was. Here we go.
After review, the call on the field is overturned. There is catcher's interference.
Wow! The Phillies have won on a catcher's interference! Baseball is amazing.
Pretty awesome. So here's what we're going to do to ask you a question today to draw you out and help you hopefully win these tickets to see the Eagles practice. Give us something from the world of sports that's unique, like the way last night's game ended. Now, let me put this one disclaimer in. I'm thinking of it more in like the variety of last night, not like, hey, Michael Phelps won, you know, 8 golds in 1 Olympics. Like, yeah,
more the
he did.
Weird, more the weird, than yeah. The special performance unique.
I agree with that. It's the weird unique, not the, hey, well, it's unique that, you know, X, Y, and Z achieved something. So give us a great answer, a unique thing from sports at 215-592-9494. Like Randy Johnson hitting the bird was super duper duper super duper duper unique. It's the only time I've ever seen it, maybe the only time it's ever happened in the long history of baseball. It goes back to about the Civil War. John Ritchie, when you think, and everyone at 215-592-9494, when you think weird, unique, what hits you, John?
How about back when Daryl Dawkins
started, oh, it's a great one.
So hard, he would rip the rim right off the backboard.
So good.
I looked into it a little bit.
Yeah.
Officially, I think 7 guys have broken backboards in the history of the NBA.
That's awesome.
Daryl Dawkins, when he had those two, that's what instituted the breakaway rims.
That's right.
It was 1979, and he did 2 in like 3 weeks.
And they also changed the nature of the glass because it was really dangerous. All the glass coming down.
Yeah, they reinforced it. And they reinforced it, but nothing could prepare backboards for Shaquille O'Neal. Yeah. Remember when Shaq came in, he ended up ripping 12 down, at least 12 of them down. Right. So Daryl Dawkins,
he brought the whole
stanchion
down one
Shaq,
time.
I remember that. He would rip the whole thing. It's like the entire gym's collapsing.
That's a great answer, John. I love it. And Jerome Lanes and Pitt was an all-timer. Great answer, that genre. Seltzer, weird, unique.
I'll give you a 2-in-1 because both parts of this are amazing. Just the fact that on August 31st, 1990, Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. became the first father-son duo to ever play in the same game, same team. But 2 weeks later, back-to-back home runs.
Yeah.
A father and a son in a Major League Baseball game. Only time ever.
Right.
Back-to-back. It's pretty amazing.
It's a great answer. Wow. Rhea, when you think weird, unique from sports, what hit you?
Now, James might be too young to remember this game, but it was one of the craziest. It was a mess of a game. 1996, Rockies-Dodgers in Colorado. 16-15 game.
Wow.
11 pitchers, 38 hits, 10 home runs. One of the players stole second, third, and home in 1 inning. It was insane.
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, I don't remember the game. I mean, I'm not too young. I'm 15 at the time, but I don't remember that specific game.
It was before, like, the only reason I know is I was watching something on that before they installed the humidor.
I got you. I remember those days were bonkers.
Oh, there were a lot of, but that game was the craziest game.
All right, so give us a great answer for weird, unique from sports. There are so many ways to go with